A month went by. The soldier baked his bread, walked with the embroideresses, often came to visit us, but never spoke about his conquests amongst the girls. He would only curl his moustache and lick his lips. Tanya came to us every morning for the little crendles, and was just as sweet, merry and friendly to us as usual. We tried to talk to her about the soldier. She called him a goggle-eyed calf and other funny names, and this allayed our fears. We were proud of her, seeing how the embroideresses ran after the soldier. Tanya's attitude towards him seemed to raise us all, and we, as though responsible for her attitude, began to assume a scornful air in our relations to the soldier. And we grew to love Tanya still more, and still more gladly and good-naturedly did we greet her in the morning. But one day, the soldier came to us a little the worse for drink, and sitting down began to laugh, and when we asked him what he was laughing about, he explained, "Two of the girls have quarrelled over me. How they did knock each other about. Ha! One seized the other by the hair and threw her on the floor in the passage and sat on her. Ha ha ha! They scratched and tore. You would have died. Why can't women fight fair? Why must she always scratch and pull?" He sat on the bench, robust and clean and joyous, sat there and laughed. We were silent. We did not like him just then. "How the women do run after me, to be sure. It's really funny. I've only to wink and they come. The devil." He raised his white hands covered with the shining hair and slapped them down on his knees. He looked at us with such a pleasantly surprised air, as though he himself were frankly astonished at the happiness he found in his success with women. His fat, rosy cheeks shone with self-satisfaction, and he kept on licking his lips. Our baker gave a quick, angry scrape with his shovel over the hearth and suddenly said with derision, "It doesn't take much to cut down a young sapling, but you try a big pine tree." "Is that for me?" asked the soldier. "Yes, you." "What do you mean?" "Nothing. It slipped out." "But wait, what is it all about? What pine?" Our baker did not reply, but kept on quickly plying his shovel, putting in the boiled crendles, taking out the baked ones, and throwing them noisily on the floor, where the boys were busy stringing them together. He seemed to have forgotten both the soldier and the conversation. The soldier, however, suddenly fell into a state of restlessness. He rose and walked up to the stove, very nearly knocking himself against the handle of the shovel the baker was flourishing wildly in the air. "But you must tell me what you mean. I'm hurt. Not a single girl can resist me, I assure you. And you say such offensive things." He was genuinely hurt. It may be that beside the capacity for leading women astray, there was nothing else he could be proud of. Perhaps this capacity was the only living thing about him, the only thing that enabled him to feel himself a man. There are some men in whom the best and highest in life appears only as a kind of malady of the soul or the body which they carry about with them all their lives, living by it, suffering by it, complaining about it, and by their complaints attracting the attention of others towards them. It is their only means of gaining the sympathy of their fellows. They have no other. Deprive them of this malady, cure them, and they will be unhappy, because you take away from them their only hold on life, and leave them quite empty. A man's life is sometimes so empty that he involuntarily prizes his vice and lives by it. One might almost say that men are often vicious from sheer boredom. The soldier was offended and again demanded loudly of our baker, "You must tell me what you mean." "Shall I?" The baker turned to him suddenly. "Well, do you know Tanya?" "Yes, what then?" "Well, try her, that's all." "I?" "Yes, you." "Pooh, that's as easy as winking." "We shall see." "You will see. Ha ha." "She will send you. Give me a month." "What a braggart you are, soldier!"